Greetings, brethren, on this night to be much observed. Now we're gathered here according to the commands given here in the Old Testament at the time that the Israelites came out of the land of Egypt. And let's begin here, first of all, in Numbers, the 33rd chapter. And we will see here from this 33rd chapter what it was like when they came out of Egypt. We read here, they departed from Ramses, this is Numbers 33, verse 3. They departed from Ramses on the first month, on the 15th day of the month, on the day after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with boldness. Now I'm reading from the New King James Version, but the King James Version I think is actually better here. They went out with a high hand in the sight of all the Egyptians. Now we know they went out at night because, and I don't think I need to take the time to go through that. We've gone through that many times before. But remember the night of the Passover, they were commanded not to leave their homes till the morning. So they could not have gone out on the Passover night. And the only night they could have gone out that would have been on the 15th would have been on the day after the Passover. That is the beginning of the 15th day. And that's what this particular night is right here. And that's what this occasion represents. Now we notice here, they went out with a high hand. Now going back to Exodus, the 13th chapter, we will notice here in verse number 17, it came to pass that when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. They could have just left Egypt, gone straight north up the coast, right to the Holy Land. But that territory was controlled by the Philistines. Now the Philistines were a very warlike people. They were very, very accomplished, and they were quite powerful. And they were able to hold their own until the time of Alexander the Great. And when Alexander the Great came down through there, they were destroyed and lost from sight. No one knows ever what ever happened to them. But up to that time, they were quite a formidable enemy for anyone in the area who encroached on their territory, although it was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God did not want them to return to Egypt. Now keep that in mind as we proceed. In Deuteronomy, the 17th chapter, here's an interesting statement, because years later when this law was given to that second generation as they were ready to enter the Holy Land, we find here, this is what God said. He's giving instructions if they go ahead and set a king over them, which he knew they'd eventually want, which they eventually did anyway. You choose one of your own brethren, you may not set a foreigner over you. Now here's what the instruction was. Listen carefully. He shall not multiply horses for himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses. That is, apparently Egypt was very famous for its horse flesh down there, and evidently had good grazing lands, but he didn't even want them to get involved with them in any kind of a business venture and become business associates and partners and begin to rub elbows with the Egyptians. He did not want them to have a thing to do with Egypt. Now, Egypt, as you will remember, is a type or a representation of sin. Now, let's notice this very famous speech that Stephen made just prior to his murder by the Jews in his day. And, if you can't argue somebody against somebody, just silence them. So that's what they did. They killed him. But anyway, here's what he says. He's referring to Moses here in Acts 7, verse 37. This is that Moses who said to the children of Israel, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. Him you shall hear. Now that's referring to Christ. So he said, Christ was the one you're to hear. This is he. That is, Stephen is saying. This is he. This is Christ, who is in the congregation in the wilderness with the angel who spoke to him, that is, who spoke to Moses, on Mount Sinai, and with our fathers, the one who received the living oracles to give to us, whom our fathers would not obey, but rejected. And in their hearts they turned back to Egypt. They could not give Egypt up. All the suffering they went through, they still desired Egypt, because it was a very plush land of all the physical amenities that one could enjoy. saying to Aaron, make us gods to go before us. As for this Moses who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. That was when he was up on the mount, receiving all the law and the commandments. So they wanted to go back to Egypt. They had this hankering to return to Egypt all the time. Now back to Numbers 11, let's see some examples here when they were coming out of the Holy Land, why they wanted to go back to Egypt. Numbers 11 and verse number 4. Now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again and said. So it just takes one bad apple to ruin the whole bunch. A little leaven ruins a whole loaf. Lose a whole lump. So they all began to weep and cry. Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. Now our whole being is dried up and there's nothing left of all except this manna before our eyes. I guess they thought when they went out in through the wilderness it was going to be a cakewalk. They'd have all the amenities of life. Well, that's not usually the way camping goes. It's a little bit rougher than that. And then in verse 10, then Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, every one at the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was greatly aroused, and Moses was displeased. They had no concept of what their future was, what the important things were, and they were wrapped up in all the physical amenities that they could get from Egypt. That's all they longed for. So there are some important lessons here that we can learn. Now in Numbers, the 13th chapter, and verse number 32, remember that Joshua had sent the scouts out to scout the land out. And actually, Moses had a little bit earlier. And so we read here, verse 31, the men who had gone out, had gone up with him, said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. Well, if you look at the physical circumstances, in many, many cases, that's what you'll think. That's why God says, it's not by power or by might, but by my spirit. And they never could learn that lesson. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land, which they had spied out. So Moses, you know, had sent these men out, one from each tribe, to scout the land out for 40 days. And the land which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants. The descendants of Anak came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in their own sight. And so we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so were we in their sight. So all the congregation lifted up their voices. And they cried, and the people wept that night, and all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to him, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, if only we had died in the wilderness, why has the Lord brought us up to this land to fall by the sword that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? There they go. Wanted to go right back to it. They wanted the easy way out. But you know, they very soon quickly forgot what years and years of slavery was like. So it just is a testimony against human beings and their weaknesses. So they said one to another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. So this is what they wanted. Well, we know what happened. That generation was condemned to wander in the wilderness for 40 years until all of them had died. And it was the second generation that went in under Joshua. But I can tell you, that second generation witnessed it too. If they didn't, they were certainly born at the time when their parents remembered very well what had taken place. Psalm 78. Here's a couple of psalms that I think will throw a little more light on this. Psalm 78, beginning here in verse number 17. They sinned even more against him by rebelling against the Most High in the wilderness. and they tested God in their heart by asking for food for their fancy. Yes, they spoke against God. They said, "Can God prepare a table in the wilderness? Behold, he struck the rocks, so the waters gushed out and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? And can he provide meat for his people?" As though God were limited. Now, I think I can safely say, if you look at manna, it probably was a perfect food. It had all the ingredients that was good for human health. And, you know, we eat a lot of things today that are not good for our health at all. How many people live on fast foods, which are essentially fat and carbohydrates? Therefore, the Lord heard this and was furious. Verse 21, so the fire was kindled against Jacob, and the anger also came up against Israel, because they did not believe in God. They could not trust God, and they could not recognize his power. Psalm 106, verses 13 and 14. They soon forgot his works. They did not wait for his counsel. They lusted exceedingly in the wilderness and tested God in the desert. So why? Because they wanted these physical amenities that Egypt provided. Now, we're not here just because that's the lesson. We're here because the lesson is for us. And we have to apply it in a New Testament sense. Now let's begin by a warning that Jesus gave here in Matthew the 13th chapter. Matthew the 13th chapter. And here are people who have the Word of God exposed to them. And so we read here in verse number 22. Now he who received the seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful. He looks at the physical amenities of this world, and that's what he wants. He puts those ahead of the truth of God. He's being given an opportunity to come out of sin, which is representative of Egypt, but also representative of this world. And he longs for what it has to offer him. Romans 13, verse number 14. Put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill its lusts. That is, make no forethought for the flesh. Now, is that what those Israelites were doing? Oh, if we just had those leeks and those garlic and the fish. They kept their minds, they meditated on those things instead of looking forward and being happy with what God gave them. So we're commanded not to allow that to happen. Now, we read those various incidents there in Egypt. They weren't just written for them, they were written for us. So the whole lesson behind these days of unleavened bread and this night in particular is to help us to realize that when we come out of sin, that is, we come out of this world with a high hand, we better appreciate the privilege and opportunity we're given. 1 Corinthians 10:6, now all these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted, and do not become idolaters as some of them were, and let us not commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and let us nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted, nor complain as some of them also complained. Sound like human nature? Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the ages have come. All it does is just take one complainer to start complaining about this and complaining about that and finding fault here and finding fault there, and he'll find some ears. Those that started that as they were coming out of the land of Egypt, they found the ears all right, didn't they? How many of them died in the various incidents that took place before they ever got to the entrance of the Holy Land? And then how many of them were forced to remain 40 years in the wilderness and died there? Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Don't think for one moment that just because we're in this present situation that that's going to go on forever. That's going to go on forever because that's going to depend on what we do from here on out. It's not how the race begins that counts. It's how the race ends. I remember a fellow in high school. He was a senior and he'd never run the mile before. And he had an opportunity to run the mile in a track meet. And when you run the mile, I mean, you have to be in incredible physical shape and condition. You got to know exactly what you're doing. You got to know when to put the speed on, when not to. And there were probably 30 men in that, boys, high schoolers in that race. That race started out, and at the half a mile mark, he was 20, 30 yards ahead of everybody. Where was he when the race ended? He came dragging in about last. It's not how you start, it's how you end that counts. That's what we better remember. Luke 17, verse number 32. Remember Lot's wife. She turned back, didn't she? Whoever seeks to save his life will lose it, and whosoever loses his life will preserve it. So if you want to save all of the physical amenities and what this world has to offer to you, and you make that your choice, that's all you're going to get. You know, you finally get to the place where you're old, where all these things that were so important to you, they don't mean much anymore. A lot of old folks can't even taste well anymore. And the things they loved to eat, they don't even enjoy any longer. So that's what happens. Hebrews 10, verse number 38. Hebrews 10, verse number 38. Now the just shall live by faith. We have to look forward to what God has promised. But if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. What did those Israelites do? God had no pleasure in them. They were condemned to die in the wilderness. So all those were 20 years on upward. They all died, right? You know, if they lived to the full limit of time, you know, they only had 40 years after that. And Hebrews 11, verses 15 and 16. And truly here it's speaking about these men of faith. This is the famous chapter that exemplifies God's Faith Hall of Fame. And it says here, these men, if they had called to mind the country from which they had come out, they would have had an opportunity to return. Now you think back of the way you lived before you had a knowledge of the truth. Is that what you want to return to? But now they desire a better, that is a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. That's what he's prepared for all of us too. And that's what we better realize, and that's what we better appreciate. And so as we read here in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse number 21, it would have been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness. It's a funny thing that when people turn from God, they never think they're turning from God. They always come up with some kind of excuse, some kind of idea. They don't like the church, or they don't like the doctrine, or they don't like the minister, or they don't like the people, or they don't like the way things are run. They don't like this, they don't like that. And they find that that's what they use. God doesn't mean a thing to them. It's their personal things that they hold so dear that are first. It would have been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than having known it to turn from the holy commandment delivered to them. They never think they're doing it, do they? But it has happened to them, according to the true proverb. A dog returns to his own vomit, and a sow having washed to her, wallowing in the mire. So that's the real lesson behind these days, brethren. It's a lesson for us. God has called us out of spiritual Egypt, and we'd better not desire to return. We better keep our eyes on the goal that God has intended for us at all times.